Blog Talk Radio.
Cleanup Hitters program. Tuesday night, that's what it is. When you hear that music, you know it's Tuesday night and it's time to clean things up. We got to run around Major League Baseball, take a look at what's going on in the league and all of the other hot button stories that might be happening right now in the world of Major League Baseball. And that's what we plan on doing here for about the next hour and a half or so. Warm day here at the frat house. It has been a warm one. Consider for a moment, it was a reminder to me, this is where I'm going with it, because it was really probably the first really hot summer kind of day that we've had. It's a reminder of the fact that we still have a lot of baseball season ahead of us, and yet over 25% of it is now already in the books. Consider that as we move into week eight. Let me get in my usual guest, co-hosts, the Frat Boys. We got Nick here with us. Nick, how are we doing tonight? Hot, is it? Hello, Nick. All right, let me see. We can get Sean in here. Sean, are you there?
Hey, Fred. How's Mike? How you doing?
All right, real good. I'm not sure where Nick is. Nick? Hello. All right. His mic's up, but we're not getting anything there from Nick. So perhaps maybe he can figure out what's happening there with his microphone. I hear a little buzz in the background. Yep. Not getting a connection. All right. Well, we'll let Nick work on that one. Week eight, hard to imagine, Sean. I mean, does it feel like it to you? It doesn't to me. I'm going to be honest with you. It's hard to imagine we're 25% of the regular season already in a Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really, really fast. I mean, the season's been going by real quick. I mean, I know we keep saying it's early, but sooner or later, around the corner here, it's not going to be so early. We're already a quarter of the way through the season.
And then Nick's going to have to find himself a new catch line. Oh,
yes,
wow.
He will.
Yeah, and he just missed. He missed the best punchline of the night. But that's all right. We got plenty more coming at him. Before we're done here this evening. Listen, while we're waiting on Nick to get in here, I'll tell you what. Let me jump around here, and I'll give you a real quick rundown. Compliments of Caleb's Sports Machine.
Tonight, through the use of the Sports Machine.
Yeah, there we go. We'll run around and take a look at what is happening right now in the world of live Major League Baseball. And as Caleb would say to us, well, there's not much. All the games I'm going to mention are just about to get underway. There were no afternoon games, by the way, this afternoon. A lot of them yesterday because, of course, it was Memorial Day. So all the games right now, these all have 7 p.m. Eastern time starts. We've got the Cubs are hosting the Washington Nationals. Baltimore Orioles are hosting the Houston Astros. Royals are at the Yankees. These are all 7:05 starts. Marlins are at Pittsburgh. White Sox at Toronto. The Texas Rangers head into Cleveland. Colorado Rockies, I'm sure, are happy to get out of Colorado. And they're in Cincinnati, where I'm sure it is quite a bit warmer than it has been in Colorado. Philadelphia Phillies are up in New York. And the Seattle Mariners are down in Tampa Bay. All right? And there you go. Nick, we got you back in there, buddy?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Very good.
Awesome. There you go. There you go. My mic was unplugged for some reason.
Technology 101, buddy. speaking of technology, you guys might not be aware of the fact that, you know, the Frat House Sports Radio Network, it keeps me busy. Let's put it that way. We've got 5 programs running now out of 7 days. 5. We've got the only days we have off. Let's put it that way. The only days we really have off are Wednesday and Friday, and I'm actually looking to try to find programming to build into those. But it's gotten so darn busy that I introduced our new assistant on our Thursday night program. I introduced our new assistant, who I had to bring in here, on the Thursday night show. And, well, let me introduce you as well, because she'll be helping out with all the programs. Sarah, a real company gal here, Sarah will be helping us out on our programs and getting them scheduled and lining up guests and what have you. And like I said, Sarah's a real company gal.
We love our Frat House Sports Radio listeners.
Yeah, there you go. That's Sarah. And so Sarah will be helping us out on occasion. You never know when she might jump in and have something to say. Because, you know, listen, just a little hint. Sarah, she kind of thinks she's a know-it-all, if you know what I mean.
I know more about sports than you do.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying? You just got to watch it with Sarah. So you never know when you're going to hear from Sarah. Anyhow. How about we take a look at the standings and the power rankings as well? Because, Nick, I was just mentioning to Sean that it doesn't feel like over 25% of the season has already gone by. It doesn't feel that way.
It goes by really quick. I mean, it really has. I think we're, what, 40-some games? So I guess we're pretty much
almost
exactly
46, yeah.
46, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so. No, that's really hard to believe. I heard that the other day. Somebody said we're a fourth of the way through the season on sports radio. I can't remember who said it, but it had me thinking, like, where does the time go? Because you sit here and you're like, man, it goes by so quick. But, you know, by the end of the season, we'll be looking back and thinking this was forever ago.
Exactly.
Isn't it going to tell us it's early?
Yeah, well, that was...
I knew you guys wanted it. I knew you guys wanted it. I was, what I was about to say, but I refrained. I stopped myself. I was going to say pretty soon I won't be able to say it's early.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Sarah beat you to the punch, you know, but...
I wasn't going to give you guys the satisfaction.
That's all right. I'm sure that you will come up with something brand new that we will be able to have just as much fun with. For the rest of you that are out there that are listening, yeah, we're just having a lot of fun because that's what we do here on Tuesday nights during Cleanup Hitters. Don't hesitate to jump in the fun, please. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us. 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and you are Skype capable, well, hit the little blue Skype button, put you through to us loud and clear. Make sure your mic is connected. If you would like, you could jump in the chat room. I see we've got some activity over there right now. Thank you. Hit me up on Twitter if you wish, at Frat House Mike. Truly, though, if we take a look at the silly power rankings from this past week, which were released, I believe, this morning, biggest movers were the Atlanta Braves. 7-3 in their last 10. Where do they sit right now? They are third place right now in the NL East, just 2 games out of the wild card there, and 4.5 games out of first place. The Washington Nationals just aren't letting up. You know, I've been sitting around here for the past number of weeks, gentlemen, thinking, yeah, come on, the Houston Astros are going to cool off. The Houston Astros are going to cool off. They're not cooling off, nor are the Washington Nationals. They're not cooling off either. Kansas City Royals, however, have taken over at the top spot in the USA Today power rankings. I was a little bit surprised. San Fran, I believe, is 8-2 in their last 10. San Fran's still listed at number 8. Am I right? 8-2. Yes, 8-2 in their last 10. San Fran is still listed as number 8 in the power rankings. So a couple of observations that just jumped out at me. Anything jumping at you guys?
Nothing in particular, no.
Yeah, no, again, it's difficult when we look at it week to week because it doesn't give as much time for, like, huge jumps since the last time we've seen it. But no, this week, not too much that really sticks out at me. That's much different than last week that you haven't touched.
All right. Like I said, I think, I don't know, I kind of thought San Fran would have moved up a bit more. San Fran moved up, I mean, they moved up 4 points, having gone 8-2. But, you know, you get a team like the Braves, they go 7-3, and they move 7 points, 7 spots on the power rankings. Yeah, if you understand what I'm saying. There seems to be, I don't know, it's not like there's not like any parity to it. I can't seem to, in other words, I can't seem to figure out the formula, but we'll leave that for the guys that make the decision. I certainly hope that both of you had a chance, because I think it happened almost a week ago now, and because we broadcasted on Tuesday night, this happened actually on Wednesday night, so we're almost really a full week behind it. The Bryce Harper ejection. And that was his second ejection, I think, in less than a week, I believe, out of a game. Now, you know, look, you know, all three of us, and it was all three of us, too. It was just 2 weeks ago tonight, we were talking a little bit about Bryce Harper. We were talking about, you know, the fact he's been around the league now. It feels like it's been longer than it really has, how young he is and how much of an offensive threat he's become this particular season, whether, in fact, he can stay healthy. But one of the things we also mentioned was, well, let's get it straight. The kid can be a bit arrogant and a little cocky, and probably I'm surprised that there aren't more pitchers throwing a pitch at him or two. But you got to be honest, what happened the other night, and I'm trying to think, who was the game against anyhow?
The Yankees?
Yes, it was. It was against the Yankees. Thank you. Harper disagreed with a call that was made. And it was obvious that he kind of disagreed with it. He really didn't mouth off about it while up at the plate. But he kind of stood back, and you could see by his body language, he was motioning to the umpire. Come on. You know, that was... And, Harper was right. The pitch was bad. It was a bad pitch. However, some chirping starts happening, as is always the case, and you guys can probably speak to it even more than I can since you played a little bit of organized ball. A little bit of chirping starts coming from Matt Williams and the Nationals bench to the umpire, to which the umpire gets up and he steps out of the box himself from behind the plate, steps away, pointing to the Nationals bench. And at that point, Harper steps out of the box himself, waiting for the umpire to come back. The umpire comes back. Because Harper was out of the box, he tells him to get in the box. Harper didn't move fast enough. He ejected him. I think this is taking pace of play rules a bit too far. Don't we, guys? Huh? This umpire was just a jerk. I mean, a flat-out jerk.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with that. I mean, with the whole new pace of play rules that came into effect, to try to speed up the game, there's been a lot of instances this season so far. I think there's been 3 or 4 times we've brought it up already about people getting notified about this rule and that they were doing something against the rules. Now, but I think one of the rules in there is that a player is allowed to step out of the batter's box if time is called. So mm-hmm. In this situation, if the umpire, it would be an umpire's personal time to go talk to the bench, the manager, whoever was hooting and hollering from their bench. So I think Harper had every right to step out of the box based on the rules because mm-hmm. the umpire had taken time from the game. Now, until the umpire, you know, would get set again and call game on, play on, whatever, I think Harper doesn't technically have to stand inside of the batter's box until the game is about to be played again. And, I mean, even still, I mean, as the umpire's walking up to the field, you know, it's good to be set, but I don't think, you know, he doesn't have to stand in the box the whole time while he's waiting for the umpire to go talk to people. I think that's a little bit ridiculous to expect that the player would. I mean, that would be really it would be really uncomfortable to just have to stand in one position, like he wants to get out, stay loose. So I think the rule is maybe going a little bit too far. But
Was this a situation where the umpire went too far? Because it looked like the umpire, I'm going to be honest with you, it just had an axe to grind against Harper. That's what it appeared to me when I saw the video. As I sat and I watched the video, it really looked like the umpire was just ticked off, let's get it straight, at Harper. Because I think he felt that Harper was trying to make him look bad. Of course, listen, the umpire was making himself do it. He was doing a good enough job of that on his own, in my opinion. But, go ahead.
In the article that you had sent over to us to read about this, I think towards the end of the article, they quoted the umpire as saying he had to eject Harper just because. Like, he didn't really have any reasoning behind it. He just said, I had to. But what does that really mean? I mean, it's not like he was outright arguing the call with the umpire. He may have given him a glance, like, maybe said a couple things to him. I mean, all of us do that as ball players. I mean, if you don't like a call, like, you're not going to, like, hold it in. Like, you might show a little something. And Harper wasn't making a whole big deal about it. So I don't understand why the umpire's reasoning is he had to eject them. It's not like he was making a scene. He wasn't doing anything, you know, to make the game any slower. So his reasoning is completely invalid. Right. He has no reasoning.
Yeah, in fact, the quote that you're referencing there, and I was just trying to get the umpire's first name. Umpire's last name, Hudson. Hudson told a reporter, the dugout didn't like it, and one thing led to another, and I had to run him. I had to eject him. Well, good point, Sean. He doesn't necessarily give a reason for why he had to eject him. It was almost as if he's saying, I had to eject him because it was a pride thing. My pride was hurt, so therefore I had to bring him. I don't know. Nick, jump in.
The way I kind of interpret the situation is not so much in a pace of play perspective, because if this was over pace of play, if a player is ejected for the pace of play rules, I think it would kind of make sense just because that's the reason we put the rules in, but I don't think that's why he was ejected. I'm just reading through the article that Frat House Mike sent us, Sean, and it's I'm just trying to skim to where I was. Harper, where is it? I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it. Harper stepped out of the batter's box, and when directed to get back in by Hudson, Harper gestured toward the plate and was ejected. But then it goes on into a little more detail. Harper was in the box, and when Hudson started talking to the manager is when Harper stepped out of the box, which he's allowed to do, and Harper made that point very clear that he's allowed to step out of the box if the managers and the umpire are going at it. He turned back to Harper and said, get in the box. And Harper turned and said, this is where I was, after he put his foot in, kind of, I have to imagine, with a bit of sass or a bit of, like, what do you want me to do type thing, like, woe is me. And that's when he ejected Bryce Harper. So was it worthy of an ejection? Probably not, but in my limited experience in baseball, I mean, obviously I've never been on the field during a Major League Baseball game, so I don't know exactly how it goes, but between umping and playing and coaching at lower levels, I kind of understand the motive, because it's not so much what he did, it's when he did it. The umpire was already a little annoyed at all the chirping coming from the dugout, and Harper should have stepped in the box and just shut up, but he unnecessarily turned and he said, this is where I was, kind of prolonging the situation. You know, the umpire was ready to move on, the manager was ready to move on, the teams were ready to go on. They're about to restart play, and Harper stops and says, look, this is where I was, like, kind of prolonging the argument and keeping the situation alive. So I don't necessarily think it's what he did. It's more just like Harper's intent and Harper's attitude towards it. When he said it, it was more... He said something unnecessary at a bad time. I think it was more that than it was what he said. And if I'm the umpire and I'm already annoyed with the hitter and I'm already annoyed, I just, you know, went off to your manager and we just got in a heated argument, and then I'm ready to keep going, and you turn to me and you say, this is where I was, I'd be pretty annoyed too. So is it worth an ejection? Probably not, but, you know, Major League umpires at every level are arrogant. They think they're bigger than they are. You know, they think they have all this power, and they don't. They need to be quiet. So I'm with you too in that I don't think the ejection was necessarily warranted, but I understand where it's coming from a little bit, and I think it's not necessarily the pace of play as it is just Harper speaking at the wrong time.
Is back to what Frathouse Mike was saying about it kind of being more of a pride thing for the umpire. What is the fact, like, if he felt like he was being taken advantage of because all these people were, like, ganging up about a call that he made. So, you know, like, he decides that someone needs to get ejected to make a point, then maybe that's where that came from. That's where I'm going with this is the fact that, I mean, like you said, it wasn't warranted, so maybe it was just more of a thing for the umpire himself to, you know, get the game back under his control or whatever he may have been thinking at the time.
If you watch the full video, which you can catch over on where, I think you can actually get it over on MLB Network or over on MLB.com, runs about 2.5 minutes. It's actually, you say 2.5 minutes, you say, well, that's long, that's short video. No, it's actually pretty long because it takes you from the beginning to the end, right up until Matt Williams himself gets ejected, okay? And then Williams does a wonderful tirade of his managerial tirade of his own, where he's kicking dirt all over the home plate, making his point known after he got ejected, which is always classic. That's always worth a chuckle and a good watch. But truly, no, the incidents as reported are exactly right. Hudson got up from his, you know, crouched stance behind the plate, gets up, pulls his mask off, and proceeds toward the Washington dugout, at which point Harper steps out. Hudson comes back. You could see him point to the batter's box, and Bryce Harper is very, very slow to get back into the box. You could see Hudson then say it again, get in the box, and I think in some respects, I think Harper did. There was a little bit of provocation on the part of Harper. As Nick insinuated, he might have gotten a bit smarmy, he might have been a little snarky with the umpire in his somewhat delayed reaction to responding to the umpire's instructions, let's put it that way. But that's how it went. It's one of those situations, and we see it, unfortunately, we see it, I think, in almost all sports, where there are times when referees and umpires and the guys in stripes, the zebras, want to become part of the game. And it happens in all sports, and this is just a really bad example of it. It really was. And it made the pace of play rules look bad. Because I frankly, you know, I was highly suspect of whether the pace of play rules were going to work. And I frankly have been probably one of their biggest proponents this year. We have seen games going quicker. And I don't think that you've seen a diminution of the product on the field whatsoever. So I'm a big fan of it. But it made the pace of play rules, I think, look bad. That's just my personal opinion, because that's where I think a lot of columnists tried to take it. That, in fact, Hudson was responding to pace of play. I agree with Nick. I don't think he was at all. I think he was responding to Harper. That's what I think he was responding to. But any final thoughts before we move on to, something that might have been worthy an 8-game suspension for an Orioles pitcher? Any final thoughts on Harper?
No, I'm ready for the next discussion.
All right, well, moving on then. Let's get over to one that might be worth, I don't know, is this one worth it? Help me out here, guys, on the pronunciation. Brian, is it Matuz? Do I have the pronunciation correctly? Caught the other night with, a little bit of foreign substance on his, I think it was on his arm during a game between the Orioles and I believe it was the Atlanta Braves? Do I have my facts correct on this one?
Yeah.
Anyhow, he was suspended 8 games. Now, look, we know this one. I guess what? In the rotation of things, 8 games might mean one miss. for a pitcher. It could mean two, depending on what the rotation is. Excuse me. But the pitcher, and I'm working on the pronunciation. I believe it's Matuz. Immediately appealed the suspension and was allowed to make his next start. In other words, they withheld the suspension has been forestalled until the appeal has been heard. Here's where I find the story actually a little bit more interesting. The story is a little more interesting when you bring in the comments of John Farrell is the manager for the Boston Red Sox, if I'm not mistaken, made the comment that he feels that pitchers ought to be allowed to have gripping substances. Now, again, I go back to you guys because you played the game. I didn't. And I know, Nick, you've got some pretty strong feelings when it comes to bringing, I guess, performance enhancements into the game. What you're thinking about this? I didn't have a problem with the suspension whatsoever. And, of course, the player has absolutely every right, if he wants to appeal it. But I didn't have any problem with the suspension. I'm not sure. I can't say I necessarily agree with John Farrell.
I think the first thing we have to consider is that this isn't a one pitcher, two pitcher, three pitchers doing it. Yeah, I mean, recently Will Smith, Brian Mattis, and forgetting the guy that got caught last week. It's not just these three pitchers doing it. And we knew that before this broke national news and everybody started talking about it. I mean, pitchers, if you're a professional athlete, you're doing anything you can to get an edge. And we saw this with Tom Brady and the deflated footballs. We see this in basketball. We see this in baseball. We see it with the performance-enhancing drugs. And I think, you know, Charles Barkley says it best, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So I think there's a scale of cheating. And this might sound a little kind of pansy, but there's definitely a scale of cheating in that the entire scale is wrong, but there are forms of cheating that are more wrong than others. For instance, if you took away these foreign substances and you gave the ball to a pitcher, he's not going to all of a sudden throw the ball 50 feet over the batter's head or 25 feet behind him. He's not going to walk 50 more batters a year. He's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. I think, honestly, it's more of a psychological thing than anything. But if you take PEDs away from Alex Rodriguez, if you take PEDs away from Barry Bonds, sure, they were bound to be great players regardless, but how many hallowed records are shattered then? You know, what did their numbers look like then? I think the impact and the effect is a little different than just a foreign substance. On top of that, I understand why the rule is in place for foreign substances. It's to take away an unfair advantage from the pitcher that a pitcher might give himself. But
correct.
Sunscreen and rosin, I mean, they put rosin on the mound, and everybody wears sunscreen. How are they supposed to stop that, first of all? Second of all, you know, teams are teaching pitchers to do this. Dallas Braden talked about that on MLB Network or ESPN or whatever it was, about how when he was in training camp, they had a station when they used to rotate through, not training camp, spring training, they used to rotate through, and there was a station to teach pitchers how to apply these substances to balls. And from lack of a better argument, it's just for a better grip. Honestly, it might be for the safety of the game, so you hit less batters. It could be so you have better control in the cold. Now, if it's 95 degrees and humid and you're sweating anyway, there's no need for it. But if it's 40 degrees in Colorado and you need a better grip, I understand why pitchers do it. They give themselves a slight edge, maybe. And, yeah, it's wrong, but what could you do to stop this? Because now, like you said, I'm not for the abolishment of the rule. I'm not exactly, as far against this as many people might think, given my arguments against PEDs. But I think if you abolish the rule, then just a real quick analogy, and then I'll stop ranting for a minute. A real quick analogy: the drinking age in the U.S. is 21, and I'm a firm believer that they set it at 21, knowing that college kids, you know, not of course not Sean or I, but college kids will drink underage. I mean, that's kind of, and some high school kids, but drinking is big in college, and they set the age at 21 knowing that kids will try to push the limit. They'll bend, they'll stretch, They'll do everything to the line without breaking it. If they moved it back to 18, all of a sudden now you got 12, 13, 14-year-olds trying to drink. If they move it back to 14, you've got 9-year-olds trying to drink. So I think when they set this rule, they know pitchers are going to do it anyway, but they set it at a point where if they do, it's not the end of the world. That's why you only see suspensions of a game or maybe two.
Wow, that's a rather interesting philosophy there. I think that opens up for a really interesting conversation that we could get into for program after program after program. let me ask Sean. Sean, jump in here. Again, you guys played a little bit of organized ball. Nick is saying, hey, this is kind of commonplace. Of course, you know, with all due respect to the sunscreen thing, who was it who two seasons ago, it was all over the bill of his cap? I don't think his cap is getting a sunburn. So I'm not sure what it was doing up there, but let's get it straight.
Yes.
Let's get it straight. Let me ask a question to you, Sean. Was there ever a time, and be honest, was there ever a time when you tried to bend a rule?
Me playing baseball, no.
Yeah, you.
No, yeah, me as a player, no. I mean, I was always a big believer in, you know, like playing the game raw as it would be. I mean, for the most part, like the most I used to help my grip at batting was batting gloves. I mean, everyone uses those, obviously.
Yeah, right. Right,
but like,
right.
Again, like that's like I never, you know, like bent the rules or, you know, used anything. I remember it was kind of funny. This is a little out of place, but I was playing soccer in high school, and one of our goalies was spraying hairspray on his gloves, and we were like, "Is that legal?" And he's like, "I mean, does it really matter?" So, I mean,
his
there's a lot of these.
His response was,
does it really matter? And it's like, I mean, I think that's probably the way that a lot of these guys are thinking about it. It's like, well, it's just like a little bit of extra help. Like, it may not make a huge difference, but like, because like, you know, if someone shoots the ball away from you or, you know, it's, you're not going to get it anyways, but if the ball's in your hands, then maybe, you know, maybe that'll make a difference when it sticks to your hand. And, I mean, with these pitchers, there's a line in this article that I really like from Farrell. And he says that it's kind of like going 3 miles per hour over the speed limit. You can talk about how it's technically against the law, but if you get the ticket, it's complete and utter BS. And I think that is somewhere where the rule really needs to be looked at, is the fact that the rule is in place and there's a lot of people that are doing it, but the only ones who get punished for it are the ones who get pointed out. So it's the things where there's people who are doing it, people know that people are doing it, but the only ones who get in trouble for it are the ones who get noticed. And I think...
Oh boy! I'm squirming over here. See, because first of all, I think Farrell's comment there is a bit understated. Let's get this one straight. You know, with due respect, and again, I didn't play your game. I didn't play baseball. I played other sports, though. Did we try to bend rules? For gosh sake, we did. I think I used it on another show. I forget what it was. I said the thing we would play around with when we played hockey was the curvature of the stick. We would play with the curve on the blade, and there were times that, gosh darn it, I knew I was going out playing with a stick that was illegally curved. I knew it, you know. All right, was I trying to give a? Yeah, sure. All right, but to say that, you know, it's equivalent to going 3 miles over the speed limit, and it's not a big deal until you get caught, and then it's a major major ordeal. And well, change the rules. Well, no, I don't know if I think that's splitting hairs now, aren't we? Or isn't that's now we're getting semantical, I think. I mean, that's just the way I look at it. The rule is the rule. You know, there's a reason why they outlawed spitballs. There's a reason why they did it. And I think, you know, this is where this has all gone from there. You know, nail files. and shaving the balls down. And then, you know, we went from there to stick 'em. And now what? What's the substance of choice? I guess it's as we're pointing out, it's a sunscreen. And what else have we seen? Pine tar. And, you know, I don't know. To me, there's a reason why these are there. And it's there to, as pointed out, give the pitcher an unnatural advantage. Well, that's the same as performance enhancement drugs. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Nick, that one is a little more serious perhaps maybe than the other, but aren't we both looking at trying to accomplish basically the same thing?
And that's where I wanted to go with my argument at first. I had said that, you know, like I'm a big follower of the raw game. I mean, like, the raw talent of these guys. It's really, like, when I played sports, weather was never an issue. It's like, for me, you play the way that the weather makes you play. It's like, you can't blame, you know, your grip on a ball because of the weather. Because if you're truly an athlete of that sport, you should be able to cope with those different weather conditions. It's like guys who play football. I mean, the guys who play in Florida are playing in this extreme heat, and then if they go play in the Midwest where it's cold for most of the year, I mean, you got to be able to adjust. You got to be able to adjust yourself, and I think that comes down to, like, your pure strength and your ability to play that sport to the best of your ability.
Absolutely.
Well, the thing that irritates me almost is the hypocrisy from the league in that sunscreen and rosin is illegal, but sunscreen is legal and rosin is legal because they put rosin bags on the mound. So if you don't want pitchers using rosin, don't put it on the mound. And I think it's
yeah, but isn't it? Aren't we talking about the application? Aren't we talking about how it's applied, though, Nick?
Well, that's exactly it. More than not, it's hard to distinguish, but there are two different versions, for lack of a better term, of application of foreign substances. One is for a better grip, and one is for more breaking the ball, or more movement, or more action in the air. And not that I want to call one immoral and one moral, but if you're going to give them rosin, why do they put the rosin there? They put the rosin there so pitchers can get a better grip, right?
Well, so, to dry out their hand a little bit.
Well, yeah, to get a better grip of the baseball is the primary motive. So now we're going to penalize pitchers for trying to get a better grip of the baseball. So to me, if you really have an issue with this, take the rosin bags away because you're tempting them. Then what are they going to use? Just sunscreen? Sunscreen's pretty slippery by itself until, you know, it dries up or whatever might happen. But to me, it's just it's a little hypocritical that they put rosin bags on the mound and then tell them they can't combine it with sunscreen. You can use sunscreen. You can use rosin, but you can't, you know, mix them together because people apply sunscreen with their hands and they pick up the rosin bags with their hands. So it'd be honestly fairly easy for a pitcher to say, no, I put on sunscreen so I don't get skin cancer and so I don't get sunburnt, and I picked up the rosin bag because you put it there and they just so happened to mix and I got a better grip of the ball. It's kind of like it's kind of like giving a child a cookie and then yelling at him because he's not eating healthy.
All right, I'll take that analogy. That analogy I might go along with. The previous analogy I might have a little difficulty with, but that analogy I like. But listen, since I'm talking about it here for a moment, and I put Sean's feet to the fire. I'm going to put your feet to the fire, Nick. You got to come clean now. You got to come clean. Did you ever try to do anything that when perhaps maybe might have been looked at and said, is that even legal?
I'm sure. Everybody screams when they take a layup. Or I used to do this thing. I swear to God, my friends from grade school loved it. I would go for a layup and I'd slap my own wrist to get the foul.
Oh wow, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
I practiced in my driveway to get it. But no, I mean even in baseball,
That's no different than flopping.
Maybe as a catcher, you step a little to the left so you hit the batter and get the interference call, or you slide a little dirty into second base, or, I mean, yeah, of course we've all kind of bent the rules a little bit, but again, I think there's a scale, and I know you don't like the scale, but I think there's a scale of cheating. Is Barry Bonds' steroid use the same as Freddie Galvis's PED use? Because some may argue in a blind world, they both use PEDs. It's the same thing. But Barry Bonds at 762 home runs, Freddie Galvis is waiting on 100. It's kind of – and people forget about Freddie Galvis, and people forget about Carlos Ruiz using PEDs. Nobody will forget about Barry Bonds. People forgot about Michael Pineda. Michael Pineda had pine tar on his neck, as obvious as anything.
Yeah.
He comes back, strikes out 18 batters, and it's not mentioned once. Everybody praises him. So I think there's a – scale, as immoral as it may be, and whether we agree with it or not, it exists. Mm-hmm. And again, whether we agree with pitchers using these substances or not, they are. So the rule can only do so much, no matter what kind of rule you put in. And if you take it away, like I made with the 21-year-old with the drinking, they're going to take full advantage of that and then see how much they can push the next rule. Say, all right, well, now I'm going to use sunscreen and rosin and pine tar, but what can I do to scuff the baseball? What can I do to pick the laces?
All right, folks, we're sitting in here. We're talking a little baseball. If anybody wants to jump in with us, 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us. 347-826-9964. Jump in the chat room. We got some folks over there. I see them up there. Hey, I'm giving you a wave right now. Thank you very much. Hit us up on Skype if you wish. A little blue Skype button put you through to us loud and clear. Or you can catch me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. And I've had a couple of people over there as well already during this program. So thank you as well. Getting a couple new follows as a result of tonight. I don't know if that means they agree with me or that they think I'm an idiot, but that's okay. I like the follows. Thank you. We're going to lose Nick. Nick, we're going to lose you in around the 8 o'clock hour. We will have a guest, however.
Early.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said I'm going to pull a Bryce Harper and exit early.
Yeah, but you're not being ejected. I'm not going to throw you out. we'll be joined as well by a guest here in a couple of – well, I guess in around the 8 o'clock hour we're going to be joined by a guest. Jeff Rickard. I've been trying to get him on with us now here for weeks and weeks, and we're finally going to get the opportunity. Jeff Rickard has had a long career now, broadcasting career. We're going to get into talking a little bit about that. Currently working with SiriusXM Radio. He's a sports talker over there and also does some broadcasting as well for ESPN Radio. So we're going to be joined by him here at about 8 o'clock or so, right around the time that we'll be losing Nick, but that's okay. Anyhow, we've got a call in here. Well, it's one of our regulars. We got to get Rick on deck on with us. Thanks for calling the show as usual, Rick on deck. What do you got on your mind tonight?
Hey, how's it going, Frat House Mice?
Real good. Hey, we're talking rules, regulations, and how to bend them. What do you think?
Yeah, I hear you. gosh, you know, it's funny because I don't know. When I was growing up playing sports, it never crossed my mind to cheat. I have to admit. You know, from my point of view, it was always my skill against the skill of my opponent. And if I had violated that in some regard by, you know, trying to take advantage, especially with, I don't know, with like foreign substances or I'm sorry to pick on you, Mike, but curved, you know, extra curved blades on my, you know, extra curve on my hockey stick.
Yep.
I just would have never felt that was me going against, you know, my opponent. I would have felt that, you know, okay, if I won, you know, was I really better than the other guy? And, you know, if you want to try to take those advantages, I was going to beat you anyway. That was just the way that my mindset was because, I don't know, there's something about the integrity of the game that I think, takes a hit every time a pitcher gets caught using a foreign substance or a player gets caught, you know, using PEDs or whatever. And I understand Nick's point about, you know, kind of like being, there's a sliding scale there. I mean, you know, certain things are definitely more serious than others. But I think that even the little things, you know, take the integrity of the game takes a little bit of a hit when those things come to the forefront. Because, and maybe it's just me, I mean, I just look at it from a purity point of view and saying that, gosh, you know what, it's a shame that people have to cheat. But I think that that could be kind of like the nature of sports these days with so much money being in it. You know, am I going to make it to the majors and make that money? Maybe I need an edge, you know, to get there. And that's a shame for the players who don't, you know, use that edge. I remember reading a baseball story in Sports Illustrated a number of years ago where they chronicled the minor league careers of two players, and they were basically on par with one another, and the one player used PEDs to get an edge on the other player and ended up making it to the majors. And it's like, you know, in a situation like that, and I there's probably 100 stories like that, but, you know, if that was known going in, I can tell you 10 out of 10 times that, you know, I believe a GM would pick the guy who made it there on his own merits rather than somebody who cheated to get there. So that's just my take on it.
I think the point, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, I think the point, though, that you were attempting to make is somewhat similar to the point that I was making when I was a youngster, and I was saying, well, hey, you know something, maybe we'd bend that hockey stick blade just a little bit more. There are certain areas where we're not necessarily, I didn't look at that as giving me an enormous edge up. I did look at it as, well, you know something, I might be able to get the shot a little bit higher. I might be able to wrist it a little bit better with this kind of a curve on the blade. So you kind of knew, but we didn't view it as, let's say, unethical or immoral. But I think the first time you swallow down, seriously, and I literally mean that, swallow down some sort of a drug that is going to make you more than you are, I think at that point now you do know it. I kind of agree with Nick that there are, well, as I think you just accurately said it, a sliding scale. I think that's what Nick was basically trying to say. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. I mean, do I have it right, basically?
Yeah, it's a scale. It's all cheating, but it's, you know, there's some aspects of cheating we need to focus on more than others.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily view, you know, perhaps playing with a stick that had a slightly greater curve on it. I didn't view it as being breaking the rule. You know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with my moral ineptitude. I'm not attitude. I don't know.
See, I got to go with Rick on this one, to be completely honest, because it's like, I mean, again, like that slightly bigger curve in your hockey stick giving you that maybe not even an inch of lift on that puck. I mean, hockey, or I mean any sport where it's like it's just out of reach of the goalie. It's just out of reach of the goalie. So maybe that little extra curve and that 1 inch that you have on your hockey stick, that you have on your shot from your hockey stick, maybe that gives you that slight advantage where the goalie was just a little too late to the point where your puck was because you had that little extra curve.
But you could say that on almost any shot.
Exactly, and I mean, that might be getting pretty nitpicky of me, but that's where I think about it, is the fact that, you know, these small things you might not think make a huge difference, but if you take a look at it on a large scale over time, you might be seeing statistics where, hey, this is really making a difference in someone's game, even though it's like a tiny little thing.
Well, I really do
believe in that.
And that's why, in fact, the NHL or any other professional organization or even sanctioning organization would, in fact, say you can't have a curve past this particular angle.
Exactly. It's like none of us want to talk about it. But Deflategate again, just that couple less PSI just a, like 2 units of PSI less in that football, and it makes a huge difference in the game. It makes a huge difference, but it doesn't seem that big when you talk about it.
Well, I mean, does it really make a big difference? Because I look at that, not to switch this discussion to football, but I look at that and say, as many footballs that were deflated, even if he was doing it his entire career, it didn't change the outcome of a game. It doesn't make that big of a difference. And on top of that, the Patriots still had to run the ball, catch the ball, throw the ball, kick the ball, you know, play defense. They still had to play football. If we think back a couple years ago to a cheating scandal that was a little more local to the home of Frat House Sports, when the Phillies bullpen catcher, the bullpen coach, Mick Billmeyer, had binoculars and was picking up signs from the other coaches. Now, that's a little obscurely obnoxious to use binoculars, but let's say I'm a bench coach, I'm sitting in the dugout, and I'm watching the other team's third base coach the entire game. By the third inning, I've picked up their signs. That's technically illegal if you want to go by the whole Mick Billmeyer thing. You're not supposed to be picking up other people's signs with binoculars, but if I pick it up on my own, is that cheating? I mean, there's some forms of cheating where it's just, does it really make a difference? How impactful is it? How impactful is it? And whose fault is it really? Now, foreign substance of the ball is by no means the hitter's fault, but how much of a difference does that really make in the game? Because the ball's still coming in, and if he's got a better grip, you're probably getting more strikes to hit. I mean, you could see it both ways. Does it really make enough of a difference
for
hitters and the league to come in and say, yeah, you know what, he's got an unfair advantage. He's got a better grip on the ball. I don't think that gives his team or him necessarily an unfair advantage to the degree where it costs anything more than, no, you're done for the game and you can't play the next.
It's a good point.
Yeah, you bring up a really interesting point, Nick, because the one thing that I will give you, if I'm a batter and I pick up something that a pitcher's doing and I know that he's thrown a fastball, I don't see that as cheating at all. I see that as, you know what, that's part of my mental game, and I figured out what he's doing, more power to me.
Agreed.
Now, if there's a guy sitting in a bullpen with a pair of binoculars trying to pick up signs, that's cheating to me. And that might be a very thin hair difference, but I see a big, you know.
At scale.
Yeah, but I see a big difference there in that one of them is based on my ability to read what's going on the field, and the other one's me being helped out by somebody who's basically cheating.
Teams have been stealing signs in baseball since the game was invented.
Yep. And
come on. The catcher goes down there and changes the signs. Oh, the whole stealing signs thing drives me nuts because to me, that should actually be part of the game. I'm going to be honest. I think it should be part of the game.
I agree
with that for Alice, Mike, but I don't agree with a guy sitting in a bullpen with a pair of binoculars. If it's a coach, you know, who's in the dugout, if it's somebody who's, you know, basically playing the game within the game, I think that that's totally legitimate. But
I agree.
If you're tape recording, you know, if you're Bill Belichick and you're tape recording guys at practice, or you're, you know, the Phillies pitching coach sitting in the dugout or the bullpen coach sitting there with a pair of knockers, I just don't see that as part of the game.
Well, I just want to make one more comment.
You guys played the game. You know that there were times the catcher had to go down and change the signs up because and they have to go through their rotation with the signs with the pitcher because, hey, I'm afraid some of the guys in the outfield who were on base are picking up the signs. Hey, big deal. That's part of the game. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I think the difference between what Rick on Deck is saying, between the binoculars and the picking it up in the dugout, is the subtlety, which, again, comes right back to the foreign substances. Are you going to put sunscreen on the bill of your cap? Are you going to put pine tar all over your neck? Are you going to put something that makes your forearm shine like the sun? Or are you going to hide it in your pants? Are you going to hide it maybe where there's dirt? Are you going to be smarter about it? Because this is the perfect analogy. People want to say, regardless of how they're doing it, it's illegal, and that's true, but the same difference between the binoculars and sitting in the dugout and picking up signs is the same difference between being obnoxiously obvious about it and being real subtle about it. And on top of that, just one more thing I want to throw out there, another form of cheating that we've discussed, is if you ever see this is more intellectual. If Chase Utley bends down to pretend to field a ground ball on a line drive to right center field that a runner was stealing on, he might try to bend down and, you know, field an invisible ground ball, trying to get the guy to slide in the second, keep him from going to third. If that guy slides in the second, that's on him. If Alex Rodriguez is screaming, "I got it, I got it, I got it," while he's on the base paths and no fielder catches it, while it's wrong of A-Rod to do that, that's on the fielders to have their head in the game. I think it's the same thing with stealing signs, and I think it's the same thing with a lot of forms of cheating, but that's something that doesn't really come up in foreign substance use because it's really one-sided. Now, we can argue, like I did, maybe they're throwing more strikes, you're getting more to hit. Maybe they're not going to be as wild. Maybe you can be more confident that they're not going to hit you so you can stand taller in the box. But I think the difference that we just made between picking up signs with binoculars and picking up signs sitting in the dugout quietly is no different than having pine tar on your neck or hiding rosin in your pants.
Okay, let me make sure though I'm clear, because I'm looking ahead to a couple of things on the agenda here. I want to make sure I'm clear on this. You're not saying that ghosting a throw to first base, a la Chase Utley, is cheating, are you? To me,
no,
that's just faking out. That's just faking out the other team.
That is smart baseball. That's
okay.
Playing,
thank you. All right. Thank you.
That's using the full advantage of the game and playing to an ability where you are using an advantage you have. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I guess the distinction that I make, even with the foreign substance, is that's something that you're introducing to the game that's not part of the game. I mean,
and that's
why
I agree with Rick.
Anything that you do mentally, that's part of you playing the game. So whether it's a fake throw or whether it's whether it's your ability to see that a pitcher is tipping pitches or being able to determine that that a certain sign means something, that's within your ability as a player to play the game. But when you introduce foreign substances that aren't part of the game or binoculars that aren't part of the game, that's when I have a problem with it. I mean, anything that you can do with your senses, with, you know, the tools of the game, go for it. But when you start introducing things that are outside of the game, that, to me, is cheating.
Yep. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I'm going to tell you, we are not going to solve this problem this evening. I think we have a good deal of conversation coming up on this before this season is over. Rick, I want to thank you for joining us again here this evening, as you always do, and thanks for jumping in with us. And I also want to thank Nick as well for hanging with us here for a couple minutes. Before I let you go, Nick, we need to get your, I'm going to move this up here, our Frat House Sports Series Streak Challenge. We want to get your pick for this week. I'll just throw it out there right now. Caleb is going with the Indians over your Mariners. Are you going to counter?
I'm going to defend my boys, and I am going to make the logical pick of picking the opposite of Caleb, and I am going to continue the streak, and you guys have guessed it, I'm going with the Mariners again.
Mariners over the Indians. I love it. As I pointed out, this is going to be our first time that we've had a staff head-to-head pick. And since you're hanging on there for 1 second, Sean, go ahead, make your pick for this week.
I think I'm going with Baltimore over Bay this week.
Orioles over who?
The Orioles over the Rays.
Rays, okay, Tampa Bay Rays. And I am really going to go out on a limb here, guys. Well, maybe it's not out on a limb. I'm going to pick the Philadelphia Phils over the Rockies. How do you like that? That takes some guts. That takes a moron.
Well, hey, if you talk about week two, you may call me the moron, but I picked them over the Braves, and they pulled it out. So maybe some luck for you there, Fred House Mike.
I hear you. All right, Nick, we're going to let you go, and Rick on deck, thanks for joining us again here this evening. Keep listening.
Sure,
we're
no problem.
We got a good guest coming up here who I will see how he feels about my pick because, I don't know, but I think he's going to have a little bit of conversation for us about the Colorado Rockies. So stick around for that one and give us a listen as we continue to go. All right, Sean, it's going to be you and I now for the next couple of minutes. But just as Nick leaves us, I got our guest online, and let's get Jeff Rickard in here. I've been trying to get Jeff now for many, many weeks, and I know that this is going to be good. Jeff Rickard, currently working with SiriusXM and ESPN. I believe you're giving us a call here from the Colorado region. Jeff, is that right?
I'm actually in Indianapolis right now. How about that?
Were you there for the race?
I was not back on race day. I was in Chicago, but my wife and I relocated to Indianapolis for her job a couple of years ago, and I have a studio built out in my home, and that's where I do most of my work. I fly to New York occasionally, and I get back to Colorado every summer for as long as they'll have.
Well, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. Love it. You got, boy, you're living the life. I would love to have a studio built for me.
Well, the downside is I built it. So.
Yeah, no. I got you. But you build it to personal specs for sure.
Absolutely, that's correct.
Before I get into talking a little sports with you, I did want to talk a little broadcasting with you. I want to talk a little bit about your career real quick, because I'm looking through things. Jeff, you've been doing this stuff for quite some time, dating back to, can I mention it, 1984?
Sure.
1984.
Sure, I'm one of those guys that started as a teenager, and I've been working hard at it ever since. And I started working at small radio stations to begin with. I started then as a junior in college. I took my first sports director on television job in the town where I was going to college. I did that for 9 years. And then on a whim, a guy came to me in Tri-Cities, Washington. I was still in my 20s, and the guy came to me and said, "Hey, I've got a dual job for you. Do you want to do play-by-play for my Continental Basketball Association team? And also, there's this new thing we hear about called sports talk radio. Would you like to start a station?" I said, "Sure, that sounds like a plan." And we've been kind of off and running ever since then. A few years later, I was in Denver working at The Fan and at a startup there. And then I moved to Salt Lake City, where I was a program director and also one of the voices of the Utah Jazz on their pre, half, and post game and some of their TV broadcasts. And it just kind of progressed from there. And one thing led to another. And the next thing you know, here I am.
You know, it's really interesting you bring that up, because there was another group I was actually listening to on the radio. I listened to sports talk radio. I tried to, from different regions around the country during the daytime, just to hear what the competition's doing. Like, as if they care about what I'm doing.
Sure.
I give them a listen just for the fun of it. And you're in around the right time. That's when a lot of people indicate that really sports talk radio began, was like in the late 80s, early 90s, I guess late 80s, 88, 89. Everybody kind of points to that time period. And so really, when you think about it, sports talk radio isn't that old.
No, the genre is really only about a quarter of a century old. And I think kind of the big main pioneer, obviously, was WFAN. But, you know, people with vision, and the guy that owned the radio group was a guy named Jeff Ripley in Tri-Cities, Washington. It was not a large place. It's I think it's the fourth largest metro area in Washington. But he had some vision, and he had an AM stick that he was simulcasting a country music station on. And he just came to me one day, and he said, "Well, you know, what do you think about trying to start up a station?" So we started looking at programming, and at the very beginning, we were a country western station, but in the afternoons and evenings, we became a sports talk station, and we started to fill it out as time went by, but I would do, along with a partner, an afternoon show for about 3 hours, and then at that time, we could get ESPN radio in the evenings, and we could get the fabulous Sports Babe during the midday. So to bridge the middays to the afternoons, we ran a show hosted by a married couple named the Dolans that was a financial show. And we just kind of cobbled things together. And at night, we ran Mariners games in the summer. We ran Sonics games in the winter. We ran Washington State football and basketball. And we just kind of cobbled it together. And I think at the time, we were one of the first 28 or 30 stations to do sports talk radio in the country. And so I was really lucky to kind of literally get in on the ground floor.
Now, let me ask you, by my bringing all this up, does this make you feel old?
You know what keeps me feeling young? I would normally say yes, except that I have a 5-year-old son and a 7-year-old son.
I know you do.
I don't have time to get old.
I know
I
you do.
Have
I
have time to get old.
I think that's fabulous. I think it's fantastic. I got to ask you, is there hope for a 54-year-old breaking into the industry?
I don't see why not. Keep going,
okay,
man.
All right. So you give me hope.
I keep telling people, if you're good, people will find you. I've always said that.
All right. That gives me hope. So now let me ask you, what you're working right now over at SiriusXM and ESPN.
Correct. Yep.
Is that right? Do I still have that? Okay. Now, I got to ask you a question about the ESPN thing. And,
okay.
You know, for all my ESPN friends that are out there who happen to be working for ESPN, I'm sorry if he's going to give you away. But I've been in touch with some ESPN folks in the past, and I've said, hey, would you come on the program, what have you? And they come back and they go, oh, I can't. I've got a contractual obligation. ESPN won't let us get on another network. Go ahead. Talk
to
me about
that. It's true, but I'm in the very unique position of being an independent contractor, which is why I'm able to work for both SiriusXM and ESPN Radio. Fortunately for me, they have a great working relationship, and they work together. Obviously, you can hear ESPN Radio on Sirius, and they have a great working relationship. Not a full-time employee of either place, although I do way more than full-time for Sirius in terms of number of shows a year. Between the two, I think last year, and I'm not making this up, I did 365 shows between
Holy
the two
smokes.
Entities. But I am
one
in a unique
day.
Position.
You're on every day.
Right, pretty much. I would say I get at least one day off. There's a lot of days I'll do a mid-afternoon show and then maybe a late-night show. And it's been good for me because I'm also able to work for different channels on SiriusXM, whether it be MLB Network Radio or NFL Radio. And I've been working during the playoffs at NBA Radio. And I'll give you a little broadcasting help and advice here, too. The biggest thing that helped me there and why I'm able to do that is, especially when I was in Denver, and I spent almost 5 years at Sports Radio 95, The Fan there. It's now 104.3. But my job as one of the younger guys on staff at that time was to be the beat reporter. And that meant that during football season, I traveled with and went to practice every day with the Broncos, kept up with the NFL. And during the wintertime, that meant covering the Nuggets and the Avalanche simultaneously. In the summertime, that meant going to every Rockies game throughout the course of the summer for the most part. And having 5 solid years of just immersing myself in all 4 leagues has given me the foundation to build on where I can intelligently go on a professional channel and speak to the NBA, especially since I've spent 15, 20 years there on a day-in, day-out basis. Because I've traveled with and been immersed in Major League Baseball for a long period of time, it allows me to speak intelligently on that. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I'm Buster Olney or Ken Rosenthal, but I have a pretty good idea what's going on, and I read their stuff and everybody else's every day, and I host enough of my own shows and talk to enough players and managers on the air that I'm still pretty clued in. So that would be my biggest thing is, you know, if you're young and you want to break in, especially when you're trying to break in, do everything, man. That was my life. I didn't get married and have kids until later on in life because I was so busy trying to figure everything out all at once, and it's really mm-hmm. paid off for me to do it that way.
Now, what are you doing right now with Sirius? Because, you know, I'm over on your Twitter account. I guess it was yesterday or today I was over there.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, folks, follow Jeff. Rickard on Sports is a good follow right there.
Thank
Rickard
you.
On Sports.
Thank you very much.
Somebody was mentioning. Somebody's mentioning over there. Hey, the show sounds great. All right, how can we hear Jeff Rickard?
All right, you can always hear me. I'll just go chronologically here. You can generally hear me on either Saturday or Sunday on MLB Network Radio, depending on what their game schedule is in the afternoon. I fill in for them a lot during the weeknights as well. I have my own show every Monday. It's not really my show. I host it with Robert Wall, the actor, on Fantasy Sports Radio. Sometimes we talk about fantasy and sports, and sometimes we talk about movies and entertainment or just life. Robert and I have a fun time doing that. I host many shows on Bleacher Report Radio when they need me. I also host their Best Of show, which we tape usually on Thursday or Friday, and it replays all morning on Saturday. I'm the primary fill-in guest in the afternoon for NFL Radio. And then ESPN Radio usually calls me up a couple of times a month when they need stuff. And somehow, some way, it cobbles together 360 shows a year for about the last 4 years. I always worry at the beginning of the month. I go, oh, I only have 12 shows scheduled 2 weeks out. And sure enough, by the end of the month, I've got, you know, I've done 25 or 30 shows somehow. It's been lucky and amazing and crazy. And on top of that, here's the even crazier part. The WIBC is the main news talk station in Indianapolis. And somehow, some way, they've allowed me to do a Saturday afternoon show from 2 to 4 when it doesn't conflict with Sirius. And they said, I said, what do you need me to talk about? Because I don't want to get too political. They said, do whatever you want to do. So I try to do whatever I feel like doing except for sports. I try not to do a lot of sports there. But I'll just talk about stuff I see in Indianapolis or lifestyle things or guy things. You know, I don't like to be crude and crass, but just life stuff. And you know what? Probably the most fun 2 hours I have in radio all week long.
I bet. How long have you now been in Indianapolis?
Coming up on 2 years, exactly 2 years in June, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Then you've crossed paths with a good friend of mine out there, and that's Kent Sterling.
You know, Kent and I have not spent time together out here
yet. Wow.
I mentioned that I've been working at WIBC. That's kind of the Emmis, that's the Emmis-owned building, and so and they're the ESPN affiliate too. So just kind of through osmosis, when I first got here, that's kind of where I ventured. I listen to Kent on the radio every once in a while. He sounds great.
Yep.
But I just, for whatever reason, Kent and I have not yet crossed paths. I'd love to meet him and talk to him.
Well, you can catch him up over, just go to my Facebook page, and you'll find him over there in my friends list, and or we'll talk afterward. Anyhow,
sure.
let's get into talking a little bit of baseball and stuff like that, because now, obviously, I kind of thought, because I was operating on the impression you were out in Colorado, that, you know, well, we were going to get a little bit of a Colorado input. But
well, you don't think I don't check them out every single night.
Well,
every,
I would
you
hope
know,
you don't. I would hope
team,
you don't.
So.
Have you looked at their record?
And I got to be honest with you. The last two days notwithstanding, it's been hard to follow the Rockies this year, man. It was a rough go there in April and May.
Oh, man alive. I mean, they got one of the worst records in baseball. You got to be following somebody better than that. Come on, man. You're following Kansas City now. You're closer to them, aren't you?
I try to follow, you know, because I do so much at MLB. I mean, honestly, the other thing that I have to do to be able to work on those channels, and it irritates my wife, although she's very understanding, I am literally on the internet or reading. I would say of my 17 waking hours, at least 12 of them are spent on the internet perusing, reading on Twitter, what's going on, who got caught, you know, getting in trouble, who got released, who got traded for, who's hurt, how they hurt themselves, you know, because everything that makes news, it's just on your Twitter feed. You can see it immediately. But, you know, there's no shortcuts. You got to know stuff. When people want to talk about stuff, you got to know. So if I, you know, I've got to be up to date when I do my shows on the weekends for MLB Network Radio. I better know who's had a winning streak, who's really struggling on the mound, who got hurt this past week, why is this team having a problem, what has been their chief complaint, things of that nature. So then you multiply that by the fact that because I'm a Colorado native, I really want the Rockies to do well, and so I follow them extensively. And yeah, I feel pretty qualified to talk about what's going on there, even though I'm five states away.
All right, well then let me test you here. I'm going to put you to the test.
The first thing I will say is if you can find anybody in America outside baseball and name more than two guys on the Rockies pitching staff, then good on you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Listen, I wasn't even thinking of going in that direction. I mean, I might be able to go there if you
All you need to know is Kyle Kendrick is their ace.
Oh, I could have named that one. I'm from Philadelphia.
There you go. And that tells you all you need to know. Kyle Kendrick is their ace.
How about we go over to the Rockies, though, from this perspective? Now, the new commissioner of Major League Baseball has recently come out and has indicated, might be inclined to talk about shortening the schedule. Hey, seems to me a shortened schedule would help the Rockies, huh? Considering they just had snow out there, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. No, they would be, look, they will find ways to make up the economic difference. And I think the reason that they can even consider a 154-game schedule is because the economics have grown so large that there's even a little bit of room to play with there. And they've also figured out ways with regional networks and marketing techniques that they'd be able to make that up. But I think the idea is, would you rather have a 162-game schedule, which has been traditional for the last 40, 50 years or so, or would you go back to the original 154-game schedule and you'd have a much higher quality of baseball? You know, guys would be getting more regular days off, which would lead to fewer injuries. Even if you took 154 days and played, I don't know, three or four doubleheaders each year, maybe day-night doubleheaders, that's even more time off for those guys to rest. Now they don't have to play from the time they show up in spring training in late February all the way up if they're going to the World Series until the first week of November. I think there are a lot of things there that make a lot of sense that really, at the end of the day, believe it or not, won't dramatically impact the bottom line for baseball. I think it's a move that's really picking up steam.
I'm okay with it. It was interesting because 2 weeks ago I had Brian McCray, former Kansas City Royal, on this very program 2 weeks ago tonight, and I asked him about it. Boy, he got a little ruffled with the suggestion. He says to me, well, hey, what about the records? What about, I mean, you know, we'd never be able to. I'm thinking to myself, come on, man, it's eight games. We're talking about eight games.
Did you remind him that when Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs, he did it in the 154-game season?
I wasn't as quick as you are. You know, obviously there, see, I just tested you. You really have your facts down. You know, look, you just showed us a little MLB knowledge.
So many of the great records were initially set in the 154-game season. So
right, sure.
It's one thing to completely alter what you do. It's another thing to maybe go back to something that you did for decades before you updated it. So, you know, the records, they're always going to be an important part of baseball. And by the way, do you think baseball cares if somebody sets a record in 162 games versus 154 and all it does is create a debate and more discussion about the game?
Mm-hmm.
They'd love that. Well, they have no problem with that.
Good point. Let me ask you about this one real quick, because an observation that and we didn't actually get a chance to talk about it as a panel here, but it'll come up next week. Don't worry. But I want to bring it up to you. The lack of no-nos so far this year. Interesting, because we've seen a couple of seasons in a row. We had a lot of no-hitters. And now all of a sudden,
Listen,
we've had a couple of teams flirting with it. Corey Kluber or Kluber was flirting with one, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. Shelby Miller was flirting with one.
Yeah, came within one out. Yeah.
Exactly. We're not seeing the no-nos.
I think, Michael, though, if you go back and look over a long period of time, season by season, you're going to see a variance. Some years you're going to have four or five. Other years you might have one or two. I can remember when Mark Burley threw a perfect game. It had been quite some time since anybody had thrown a perfect game up until he had gotten one. I think these things just kind of go in their waves and cycles, and so much of it is luck. You know, Shelby Miller induces a ground ball in the 27th out a couple of weeks ago against Miami. Two things happen, you know. Well, really just one thing, but he gets the no-hitter, and maybe Mike Redmond would have been fired 15 minutes earlier as opposed to 15 minutes later. But, you know, I just think those things kind of have a rhythm of their own. Pitching in general is dominating hitting over the last 2, 3, 4 years, which to me is indicative that while it probably hasn't completely gone away, the problem with performance-enhancing drugs is probably greatly abated. I think you see that in the overall lower batting averages, the overall lower amount of home runs that are being hit, the overall lower amount of high OPSs that we saw. And I think it's kind of shifted advantage pitcher at this point in time. But as far as the no-hitters and the perfect games, I think those things just kind of have a life and a cycle of their own. And, you know, they happen when people get lucky, and it just kind of goes that way.
I got about, maybe 4 minutes here. Jeff, I want to get into this real quick because, and again, this was going to be a hot topic for our panel this evening, although it can wait until next week. We're not going to get to it. That's all right. But the Wall Street Journal, and I'm sure you probably saw it, came out with an article the other day itemizing some of the problems with potentially Major League Baseball's future. Talking about how there's just not the participation in Little League the way that there used to be before. Kids just aren't excited by the game any longer. They're going to other sports, if they're going to any sports at all. I frankly think that what we're seeing is we're not seeing as many kids in all sports. That's my gut feeling.
Well, I think it depends on regions, too. Clearly, the national averages are way down, as the Wall Street Journal article you referenced pointed out. They are way down, and I think if anyone wants to really examine that, that's a great place to start. They can go look at that. Just Google Wall Street Journal, declining baseball participation. I think if you use those words, it'll probably bring it up to the top of the list. But there is a problem, and baseball's known it's had a problem, and they specifically knew they had a problem about a decade ago, especially with there is a really low number of African-American participants in baseball. And I think there are a lot of different reasons for that. Some of them are socioeconomic. Some of them, I believe, that are pace of play. Some of them, Sharks went off. Sorry about that. Some of them are, you know, just economically driven. And I think baseball's got to find a way to get their game marketed back in front of young people. I know my five-year-old just started playing T-ball this past week. He's played three games. They've already graduated to soft pitching, those kids. But in my neighborhood here in Indianapolis, up in a town called Carmel, the participation is huge. I think they're just in his age group of 5 to 6 year olds. I think there's 8 or 10 teams right there, and I think through all the age ranges, there's well over a couple of dozen. So I think it depends on areas. I do think that because this country is now represented, and wonderfully so, by so many minorities, baseball has not done a great job to reaching out to the American minority and getting them involved in baseball like we see in other sports. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think baseball has always reflected a little bit of America. And baseball will figure this out. It's a great game. If you introduce kids to it and they play it growing up, like all of us did, I think they'll fall in love with it. But it's a pace of play issue. It's an action issue. It's also a cool issue. And baseball's just got to figure out a way to become hip and cool for young kids again.
Real quick follow-up. If, in fact, we were to continue to see the trend continue, could we see more and more of a serious situation where, as you're just pointing out, perhaps maybe we're accelerating kids too quickly?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I'm not, I mean, again, to try to address, because I don't know that I've spent enough time really thinking about it. I think the biggest worry baseball has is, you know, it's a worldwide game. So they're always going to be able to find talent for the major leagues, whether it comes from Cuba, the Dominican Republic, United States, Venezuela. It's starting to catch on in Europe in some places. That doesn't worry me. What worries me is guys like you and I, who are never going to play Major League Baseball, but we grew up loving the game and going to Major League Baseball games with our dads and our brothers and our sisters and the whole family. That's what worries me, that you won't have baseball fans by the time they all become 25, 30 years old. And who's going to consume the product at that point? And I think that's
good
the big
point.
Worry baseball has right now.
And
good
I'd like to jump in here too, actually, is the fact that I think I read this somewhere that the game is becoming a lot more pinpointed towards kids who are going to end up growing up playing the game of baseball instead of back when I was playing, when the casual baseball fan could go out and play on their local rec team to just be able to out, you know, play the game or whatever. Yeah. And I think that's becoming more of an issue, is the fact that people are only playing the game if they're planning on playing the game for a majority of their life instead of just playing it just for the fun of it.
Well, you know, to echo what you're saying, and I know that Michael and I are kind of the same age range, is that, Michael, when we were kids, we didn't need rec or teams or T-shirts or hats or anything. We just got everybody in the neighborhood together, whether it was five on five, ended up being 8 on 8. We just went to the school diamond or the local park, and we just played till our parents made us come home. That's what I don't see happening anymore.
And that was even lost back when I was playing baseball. I mean, when I was playing, I mean, I'm only 20 years old. So when I started playing baseball, I mean, I played on a team. I didn't go out. I mean, every once in a while, I would go out with a couple of people in the neighborhood and play something small in the cul-de-sac or whatever around the corner. But for the majority of the time, like, if you weren't on a team, you weren't really playing. And the fact that it just keeps dwindling and dwindling more as the thing goes on.
Well, you're exactly right, you know.
Yeah, we're going to get into this topic. I know, and I think, Sean, what I want to do, I actually think what I want to do is have a panel one night where I can get you and Caleb and Nick all together on one panel, and we're going to talk about this one. But I got to wrap things up because we're running it tight here tonight, unfortunately. Jeff Rickard has been joining us, SiriusXM and ESPN, and you can catch him over on Major League Baseball. You said the best times, what, are on the weekends, right? Major League Baseball.
This Saturday afternoon I will be on from 1 to 4 on MLB Network Radio.
There you go.
You can also catch me, if there's a game Friday night in the NBA, I will be doing the post game on NBA Radio.
And, folks, get over to Rickard on Sports, RICKARD on Sports, over on Twitter, and give him a follow over there, because, as I pointed out, good follow. Jeff, we got to get you back in. This has just been too entertaining. Too much fun.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks for thinking about me, and I'm glad we could finally connect. You know, the best shot we had a couple of weeks ago, my 7-year-old complaining about this really sharp pain in his stomach, so we take him to the emergency room thinking, does he have appendicitis? What's going on?
Right.
3 hours later, he felt fine. He got to go home with a stuffed snake from the emergency room. So that, I guess, is being a parent. I don't know.
He just wanted the snake. That's what he knew was out of it. Come on. You got to watch his kids. I raised 3 of them myself. I know how they work.
Yeah. But I'll probably call you for advice.
Hey, do that anytime. We'll talk. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, buddy. Again, thanks for asking me. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You got it, man. Anytime. All right, Jeff Rickard has, boy, I've been working on getting him, and that was just worth it. That was absolutely worth it. Delight. Absolute delight. All right, we are down to just a couple of moments. And I'm serious, Sean, what I want to do, because, you know, I know that you, well, I know you and Nick and Caleb all played Little League. And here's what
Nick played together.
Yeah,
in Little League as well.
And Nick has indicated he has coached, and I know Caleb is coaching right now. And what I want to do is I really want to get somebody from Little League of America on with us. And I'm going to work on that.
I think that would be great.
Yeah, I'm working on that one. And I think, you know, honest to gosh, we could do an entire 90-minute program just on that topic alone.
Oh, I think we could. We'd have a lot of good conversations.
So, you know, when I can work that one out, I think we got to do that. We got to make it a special edition. And hopefully that'll be happening soon, where we will get talking a little bit about youth participation in baseball, because apparently, folks, it has become a bit of an issue. It's become a bit of a problem. And as you just heard Jeff point out there, all you got to do is just go over, because the article just came out the other day, and just Google Wall Street Journal and youth participation in baseball. And you will find the article that I'm referencing. It was very, very enlightening. I sent it over to you, Sean. I know you read it, and you had some comments about it. I know you feel strongly about it, and we'll save those comments for a future program when we can work that one out. All right, there you go. There's been our program. It has been a lot of fun. I want to thank everybody who has been listening in this evening. Thanks to Rick on Deck. Many, many thanks to our guest this evening, Jeff Rickard of Sirius XM and ESPN and also Major League Baseball. We want to get Jeff back in here. Please make sure you're following him over on Twitter, Rickard on Sports, and make sure you're also giving him a listen on MLB Network on Radio. All right, so check that one out. I'm sure that probably streams live. Our program's coming up Thursday night, 194th edition. Holy smokes, there we go, 194. We will be putting in the books Thursday night live right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, the Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, coming to you Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's see what comes next. What comes next is, I'm at a loss, Saturday, Frat House Saturday program, a relaxed Frat House Saturday. Boy, we had a great one this past week with our good buddy Greg Peterson from up in Oshkosh, but he won't be there for long. He's heading out to Tennessee in the next couple of weeks. We had a great one, live conversation with our good buddy Greg Peterson. But that'll be coming to you here live on 2 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. Sunday morning, be here for our RaceTram Motorsports Hour as we move into the halfway point of the NASCAR season. Race number 13 will be coming to you on Sunday at 11 a.m. will be our time for our RaceTram Motorsports Hour. All right, there you go. That's it for this evening. Sean, thank you. Thanks for hanging in, and many thanks to Nick, who unfortunately had to bail out on us a little bit early, but that's okay. How do all of you guys, and we thank you as usual. Sarah, I think you know what to say, right?
We love our Frat House Sports Radio listeners.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Catch you here on Thursday night. Be here with us, please, for our Frat House Sports Show.